You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
Queen City Companion is back with another all-false batch of stories, performances, heck, whatever these guys can come up with. This month, your guest host Brian Flynn brings you the following batch of maker-uppers: O. Shelby, Jake Ortiz, John Wenzel, No Gods, No Masters, Steve Vanderplug, and Jen Kolick. You may notice Steve Vanderplug's act is edited weird. That's because of a faulty mic cable. But because he's so funny and worked hard, I still included a little bit of his act, which wasn't ruined, so you can enjoy a little bit of the character he brought to the table. Enjoy Queen City Companion, and we'll see you the first Thursday of June. Now, your host, Brian Flynn.
Making up the stories, making up our dreams. Queen City of the High Plains, we're lovers of the scene. Now I'm in love.
Thank you for coming to Queen City Companion. I'm Brian Flynn. I'll be Christy Buckley tonight. Already breaking the mic stand. We're off to a great start. If you've not been here before, Queen City Companion is an all-false storytelling show. It's a very fun time. I'm very glad to take over the reins from Christy for a month. We have a incredibly packed show full of people from all walks of life, different all sorts of writers and performers. So I really want to get moving, so I'll just lead off with a little excerpt from the fiction piece I'm currently working on, and we'll have a really good time. Is everyone ready? All right. This is a sort of fantasy story. It's called Scheherazade. Here we go. Ismail touches the hilt of his sword and waits for the village to fall asleep. The muezzin made the final call to prayer an hour and a half ago, and the sun has sunk behind the mountain. The children's dreams will be the first, and the streets will fill with white horses and colorful monsters. In the hollow bit of night between sunset and sleeping, Ismail always tries to remind himself his sword is still there. A piece of candy falls at Ismail's feet. Its uncanny pinkness glows through the wrapper, beckoning like candy always does. Ismail looks up to see a soft rain cloud drizzling sweets on the village, and he knows the children are starting to dream. He picks up the piece, peels off the delicate paper, and lets it dissolve on his tongue. A high-pitched wail fills the sky and draws his gaze to a falling girl. When he first joined the Harishilm, he ran up and down the village streets, diving to catch the plummeting children. After 3 nights of falling in the street, exhausted with worry, he learned that they always wake up before they hit the ground. Ismail could sometimes hear a loud gasp coming from some house or another as the dream blinked out of existence and the child returned to waking. He no longer ran after them, and he did his best to shut out their breathless cries. After 10 years of service, he knows the dreams of the elderly will come next. Dead lovers shining like stars will illuminate the street. They will peek into windows and whisper to those left behind. There will be dancing like they could only do when they were 20 years younger. A young boy in dented armor running from some battle years ago. Then the adult's dreams will take shape, and Ismail knows he should avert his eyes from their sensual acts. His duty must outweigh his modesty, though, and he keeps his eyes up, scanning the street for nightmares. He whispers to himself, "Guide me now on the straight path, the path of those you have favored, with whom you are not angry, and who go not astray." The Sultan had ordered Harishilmi from the city to patrol the village after the attacks. This young one here is not used to the quiet of the mountains, the looming shadows of the cedars. Ismail sometimes imagined what the city would look like when the dreams came out, how crowded the streets would be with thousands sleeping, thousands dreaming, dreams from far coasts sailing into the port. Ismail no longer had the frantic energy city duty required, and even back when he did, he preferred the village. I'm skipping a little bit. Ismail had fought awful nightmares before, but his heart had never faltered like the last 3 nights. The shape of a mountain bear, but twice as large. and where its face should be, there was a deep and encompassing blankness, a sense you were already being swallowed. It didn't have a mouth. It was mouth and hunger unending. For 3 nights, it had rampaged through the streets, beating on the gates of houses with its body. The first night, the nightmare threw itself against the baker's walls with such might that, the rumor is, the whole family fled to the city. The third night, the blacksmith's son was mauled in the alley as he tried to sneak back into the house. This morning, they buried him in view of the river that swells in the spring. The wailing of the boy's mother sang to Ismail's guilt, and he couldn't sleep until the afternoon. And when he did, he had the dream he used to have all the time. He was a swallow, one of thousands, flying in a line over the desert. He carried a pebble in his claws. He looked down and saw there was an army of elephants marching eastward. He let the stone fall and it struck an elephant. The animal crashed into its neighbor, one after another, a wave of elephants toppling over in the billowing sand. A high chirping faded from his window as he opened his eyes. So that's a little excerpt of that. This wild swinging between tones. That's what we're going to expect tonight. There's so many amazing people here, and I am so happy to bring up your first artist. She is the publisher of Cherry Magazine, one of my favorite fiction magazines in town. The deadline, actually, for submissions for the summer issue is the 15th, so that is coming up. And she'll also be participating in the meeting of the mags with a bunch of local publications coming up May 25th at Book Bar. So please, please help me welcome Jen Kollek to the stage.
Thanks, guys. I'm going to keep things short and creepy to start off with, so I hope that's your jam. This is called The View from the Train. Through unfocused eyes, the fields seem to be passing slowly, but eventually, the tracks wind through the industrial edges of the city, all vacant warehouses and run-down power stations. Then dirt alleys, backyards with dingy laundry hanging slack over dead grass. The lawns become progressively larger, lusher, farther apart. The train slows for a platform of evening commuters, and they shuffle on, eyes on their shoes or books or phones, like water through a breaking dam. Pulling away from the station, Tom looks up and sees her, his ex-wife, in the parking lot, arguing with someone. As the train accelerates, he leans closer to the window. He can only see the man's back, broad and unfamiliar in a brown coat. But it's definitely her. The bright red hair, eyes flashing angrily over the stranger's shoulder. Weary passengers file in around him, huddling into their seats, shoulder to shoulder in the aisles. Just before they blink out of sight, the man reaches for her. Tom starts to stand, crane his neck past the tired bodies pressing in around him, but they're already gone. He knows he deleted her number a long time ago, but he checks anyway. Thanks.
Jen Kollek, everyone. Your next performer, this is her first time doing anything like this. According to her, Christy Buckley, I'm not going to say bullied, but strongly suggested she do this. And I'm so excited to have her here. So let's all please give a warm welcome to Shelby.
All right. I wrote this within the last 24 hours, so yeah, here we go. Sarah woke to a throbbing in her temple. She rubbed the sleep from her eyes as she tried to process the reasoning for the pain in her head. As she opened her eyes, Sarah realized three things simultaneously. She was not wearing pants. She had no idea where she was, and there was a stranger lying next to her. Instinct told her to stay still, but her bladder made it clear that this couldn't be an option for long. As quietly as she could, Sarah swung her feet to the floor and scanned the room for her pants. She couldn't see them, and she was not about to risk the noise it would take to make a proper search. Giving up on clothes, Sarah slowly inched towards the nearest door, praying a toilet would be near. Gonna go pee. Gotta find pants. Get the hell out of here. Wherever here was. Sarah was reveling in the satisfaction of a much-needed pee when she heard a knock on the door. Hey, honey, I heard you get up. Are you okay in there? Fuck. So much for a stealthy exit. Yeah, I'm fine. Kind of have a headache, but I'll survive. There's ibuprofen in the cabinet. Feel free to help yourself to some and anything else you need in there. And when you're done, I'll make us some food. Okay, thanks. Do you know where my pants are? Oh, shoot, I almost forgot about that. They're in the dryer. I'll go grab them for you. Listening to footfalls fade down the hall, Sarah's mind raced with questions she wasn't sure she wanted the answers to. Another knock. Hey, honey, I'm going to leave your pants here by the door with a towel and a clean t-shirt. Take whatever time you need, and I'll be down the hall in the kitchen. Sarah washed her hands and took a few mouthfuls of water from the faucet. She turned to the cabinet. She assumed to have the ibuprofen inside and froze. The reflection in the mirror was hers, but normally the face that looked back at her from shiny surfaces wasn't swollen, pale, and green. Oh, no. Memories of health class raced through Sarah's mind as she made her self-diagnoses. She had somehow contracted stigmatitis. No! Sarah couldn't believe this. She felt dizzy. She had never had an STD. Sarah was a healthy, clean person, and she always used protection. Well, mostly, half the time used protection. It was hard to say. Blacking out was the only predictable behavior of drunk Sarah. She puked. This was it. She could never have sex again. She was in a stranger's house, as hungover as she could ever remember being, puking up what little liquid her body still held, looking like an anaphylactic Kermit. This is what rock bottom feels like. Bursts of sobbing started to blend in with the dry heaving. When she finally felt able to release her grip on the toilet, Sarah pulled herself halfway up and crawled to the bathtub. After 20 minutes or so of sitting under the running water and feeling sorry for herself, there was another knock. Heya, just checking in. You still doing all right? Did you need any help finding anything? In her struggle to form a coherent response, Sarah simply blurted, "We do." Oh, honey, you're having a rough one, aren't you? Why don't you get dressed so we can get some food in you and work on getting you on the up and up? Up. Okay, I'll see you in a few. With staggering effort, Sarah grabbed the pile of laundered goods from outside the bathroom door and began to dress. She was struggling to decide what to do next. The better part of Sarah's instinct was telling her to grab her shit and run. Don't look back, just bolt. There were the realities of bolting. She didn't know where her phone or wallet were, and she didn't know where she was. Beyond that, she didn't know if she was ready to go outside looking the way she did. She wasn't sure she could handle being judged in the way she knew she would be, the way that she would judge someone who looked like her. Avoiding her reflection, Sarah took a motivating breath and walked out of the bathroom and headed towards the kitchen. She smelled something cooking and realized how hungry she was. The kitchen was warm and well-lit. Standing in front of the stove was a man, and by appearance, he had maybe just a few years on Sarah. Sarah cleared her throat. Oh, there you are. I was about to give up on you. How are you feeling? I'm okay. The man gestured towards the table. Here, take a seat. I poured you a glass of pickle juice to help with the hangover. Do you need anything else? I would love a cup of coffee with a scoop of sugar if you have it. Sarah took a seat and took a sip of the pickle juice. She gagged. Yeah, not for everyone, but if you can get it down, it'll help. So, I'm sorry to be blunt, but I really don't know who you are or why I'm here. Well, much of anything. Do you know where my things are? Why my face looks like this? Ah, gotcha. Well, wasn't sure if you'd remember much of anything. I guess not, huh? My name is Grayson. I found you last night crying in the corner of a dive bar up the street. A wave of vague remembrance hit Sarah. You were swabbing and swollen and green and covered and sick, and you wouldn't or couldn't tell me nothing about nothing, so I insist instead of having you sent off to the drunk tank, I scooped you up and brought you here. Seemed like you needed a little bit of help. This didn't make any sense. Sarah believed the bit about crying in the back of a dive bar and about having puked on herself, but why would a stranger let someone in their home, their bed, even when they're so obviously afflicted with a contagious STD? Weren't you worried about, you know, my being green? Oh, you mean the stigmatitis? Nah, that don't worry me. Can't catch what you already got, you know? Wait, have you never had an outbreak before? Is that why you were so damn drunk and upset? You know that stigmatitis isn't anything to worry about, right? So, did we, have sex? No. I don't make it a habit to have sex with anyone as drunk as I found you. Or women, for that matter. Tears started to well up. I never felt so gross. This doesn't happen to people like me. Oh, hush. Sure it does. Stigmatitis happens to everyone, or at least most everyone. No need to be stressed. Not like it causes any harm. Once you get some rest and food, you're going to be looking and feeling just like new. like it never happened. No one guarantee, but it'll probably be the only time this ever happens to you anyways. Most people have it. Some people have outbreaks and some don't. Most who do have outbreaks won't even have more than one or two. Even if you do, it isn't hard to deal with. They're short and they really don't hurt. Sarah just sat and tried to process. Stigmitis wasn't a big deal. This man was obviously stupid. You think I'm stupid, right? Well, not exactly. I guess I don't understand how you can have such a laissez-faire attitude about STDs. Oh, honey, I don't have a laissez-faire approach to STDs. I said ACDs. STDs. I'm all about protecting and testing, but I also get that if you're having sex, sometimes you're going to catch something. It's just part of being sexually active. I'm guessing you haven't ever been tested. Well, no. I don't do drugs or anything, and I'm pretty sure I would have noticed if someone I was sleeping with had something. Grayson rolled his eyes inside. Oh, and this is when we have an abrupt end because I didn't write that well. I tell you what, I'm going to take you to get tested. Stigmitis isn't a big deal, and neither are most STDs. You just have to catch them early and get them taken care of. Easy. Why are you being so nice to me? You don't even know me, and I'm sure my drunk self didn't make a great impression. I remember when I had my first outbreak. I was scared and ignorant. I saw myself in you, and I didn't have the heart to just walk away. Pay me back by helping someone else someday. So, the theme is get tested, and herpes isn't a big deal. There you go.
One more time for Shelby, everyone. Very excited to welcome your next performer. He's a musician. You can find his project Golden Owl on Spotify and iTunes. But please give it up for Jacob Ortiz, everyone.
Well, I got a couple songs for you tonight. When Christy started this podcast, I actually started working on a theme song for her. So I'll play a portion of that for you. Oh. In the queen city of the plains, queen city companion. In the queen city of the plains, queen city companion. Queen city companion, queen city companion. Well, it needs some work, but... So here's the real songs. What a wild world we live in. Things are changing, and they're changing fast. What a crazy world we live in. Think it might be time we move along. Don't you know it's been a long December? January can belong to you. Because when the sun comes up tomorrow and you're here and I'm here too, we'll hug and love one another. Because I think it's time we move it along. What a wild world we live in. And times are changing all the time. What a crazy, crazy world we live in. Think it might be time we move along. Don't you know it's been a long December? January can belong to you. Because when the sun comes up tomorrow, and you're here and I'm here too, we'll hug and love one another. Because I think it's time we move along. And this next one should be out soon on the iTunes and Spotify, like in a week or so. Walking on by a lake at night, no one around, somewhere out of town. I can't find a light and no one in sight. I think I'm lost here out on my own. I'm running late now, I'm losing my mind. I'm running now and I'm falling behind. Running loose, but it's part of desire. Running on empty, I'm losing it all. Taking my whole life, taking the fall now, making my own, and I'm doing it. Running on empty, I'm losing it all. Taking my whole life, taking the fall now, making my own, and I'm doing it. I was just in the dark, and I hope for a spark. A stranger with gas, and she's got a match. And now I'm safe from this watery grave. I guess I'm happy after all. I'm running late now, I'm losing my mind. I'm running now, and I'm falling behind. Running loose, but it's part of desire. Running on empty, I'm losing it all. Taking my whole life, taking the fall now, making my own, and I'm doing it. Running on empty, I'm losing it all. Taking my whole life, taking the fall now, making my own, and I'm doing it. Running on empty, I'm losing it all. Taking my whole life, taking the fall now, making my own, and I'm doing it. Running on empty, I'm losing it all. Taking my whole life, taking the fall now, making my own, and I'm doing it. Thank you.
One more time for Jake Ortiz. Talking is hard. Your next performer has written for the Denver Post for many, many years. He's written all over, in fact, and I'm super excited to have him. Please, please help me welcome John Wenzel, everyone.
Thank you. So I know the theme of the show is made-up storytelling, but as a journalist, I haven't written fiction in years. And also, the fiction I did write was fucking garbage, so... So I'm going to tell a true story tonight. On the list of stupid things I've done, running a 5K for my 40th birthday last year is either first or last. That's because I mostly sat still for the last two decades as I drank and smoked my way out of healthy coping skills, which might have come in handy during the string of family deaths, medical emergencies, and suicidal thoughts that followed the birth of my son 5 years ago. I just assumed I'd grow out of my bad habits and into better ones by virtue of aging, or that I'd snap into the shape of a responsible dad just by having kids, like some cover model for a parenting magazine with a cockeyed grin and a kid in a Star Wars t-shirt on his hip. But it took a growing number of concussions, chipped teeth, and lost nights for me to do something about my brain's violent incompatibility with alcohol. The wall between my ideal self and my real-world actions wasn't crumbling fast enough. I needed a healthier coping tool, having grown sick and tired of feeling sick and tired, as people in my position or AA meetings tend to say. Jogging, as it turns out, fit as snugly into my synapses as my pricey new Nikes did on my feet. But it felt particularly intimidating to tackle in Denver, the capital city in the statistically fittest of all states, where people run in the same way they drink beer and smoke weed all the time, everywhere. And whimsically named 5Ks seem to outnumber jam bands and yoga studios. I used to hate people like me. Oh, you're jogging now. Bully for you, you sanctimonious fuck. Now I don't hate those people. Anyone can jog. Just look at me. I've become an organically better human through honest-to-God exercise and toil. The way sweat dilutes my otherwise suffocating melancholy like the sun at dawn or something like that. Training for a 5K was not the jubilant thunderbolt that I expected. I used to watch people run from the window of my bus every morning and fantasize about how self-satisfied they must be, the world streaking by in blobs of color, everything tasting and smelling better as a result. Virtue in motion. Instead, getting there was a series of mundane heaving steps, and as time went on, a light morning jog in my Target brand activewear. I set January 1st, 2017 as my start date, spurred by my wife, who completed her first half marathon not long before getting pregnant with our second child. But I actually started weeks later, following procrastination, don't judge me yet, but also legitimate delays from having a newborn baby and a preschooler with type 1 diabetes. Also, this isn't in the story, but it just occurred to me, Horizon Zero Dawn came out February of last year, and I spent like a month playing that and getting unreasonably high. Despite my realistic sense that I would be inhaling lungfuls of lava for the first few weeks of running, I mostly looked the part, with starter Nikes from Runner's Roost, a Couch to 5K app tracking my progress on my iPhone, tucked into one of those rectangular armbands that makes everyone look like a fitness mannequin. Mantras emerged as I chalked up days. I will work to demolish my expectations, the enemies of my motivation. This was because, despite my healthiest habits, I would come down with repeated colds while training, owing to the nasal pestilence my son brought home from preschool, which also hospitalized my two-month-old daughter with RSV, a common but serious respiratory virus, and briefly brought oxygen tanks into our home. Two, running will feel nearly as brutal and dispiriting in its own way as trying to quit smoking cigarettes, which I did in the summer of 2016, and which I still deeply regret. Thankfully, running also made me feel more connected to my North Park Hill neighborhood than anything I've done since moving there. I quickly came to anticipate where the sidewalks were cracked and bumpy, where I had to swing onto the road to avoid an unruly hedge, and which houses to sprint by so as to escape their growling off-leash dogs. I love stealing glimpses of people's lives as they fussed with their yards, glared at me from porches, or made dinner in warm kitchens at dusk. Most urban runners have witnessed this, and I thought a lot about that too, how I was a cliche from a back issue of Men's Health, how unspecial I was, and how if I were to pass myself in the car, I'd probably laugh at my dumb, puffy red face. Despite that, my heart did not explode like a hot grape. My rubbery legs did not fail me, and the apps I used, Runkeeper and a Couch to 5K program with a soft female British voice, guided me through the gradually stepped-up intervals of walking and jogging until, at last, I ran without stopping for 10 minutes, which is something I've never done in my life. I'd be furious when the apps lost their GPS bearings and failed to report my progress in maps and numbers. I was exultant when they told me something I wanted to hear, namely, and walk. I began taking antidepressants for the first time in my life, thanks to a psychiatric consultation that helped me realize that if I could start running, I could try anything else, too. I began sleeping better, doing push-ups and sit-ups in the morning, noticing that the donut around my midsection was shrinking. And since I had identified the Colfax Marathon's 5K in City Park as my inaugural run, scheduled for May 19th, about a month before my 40th birthday last year, I had a deadline to meet, and those I understood. The carrot dangled, and having quit drinking and smoking and started exercising, my appetite was growing. Suicide, substance abuse, and mental illness run strong in my immediate family, and I've struggled with all three, usually in a hazy, self-medicated way. My system failed me in September 2012, a few weeks after my first child was born. My dad and stepmom had purchased plane tickets to visit us from Dayton, Ohio, and my mom was already in Denver visiting her new grandson when I got the call that my dad had died of a massive, unexpected heart failure at the age of 63. Watching my son being born, then celebrating what would have been my grandfather's 100th birthday, then hearing of my father's death, in that order, all within 4 weeks of each other, felt like some cruel Shakespearean joke, especially because the four of us, my son, myself, my dad, and my grandfather, all have the exact same name. There were external challenges, too, bundled for maximum impact. Family addictions and hospitalizations, financial collapse, death of close aunts and uncles, buyouts and layoffs at the Denver Post, all jockeying for starting position. These forced my wife and me to confront every aspect of our lives that wasn't built of stone. And having lived most of our 20s and 30s as if we were freshmen in college, it was probably time. This lowly 5K had become increasingly larded with significance. I've almost felt sorry for it. How could it possibly shoulder all this symbolic weight? But I tried not to overthink it. I stumbled outside a few times a week, occasionally realizing how lucky I was to be able to still do this despite my poor health choices in the past, namely nearly a quarter century of smoking cigarettes every day. I could run and fast if I wanted to. I had been giving something like a second chance. But I couldn't think of it as that because in journalism, cliches are anathema. The day of the race came, a feeling of quiet destiny and giddiness permeating my movements. My buddy Jim joined me along the dewy, chilly path in City Park, along with what felt like tens of thousands of other souls. Being one of the healthiest people I know, Jim was put into a much faster group near the front. I was in the back with the kids and dogs, which was fine. I'd been sick a couple weeks earlier and wasn't exactly where I wanted to be. In fact, I'd only gotten halfway through the Couch to 5K app in general. My wife and kids, smiling from the grass, wished me well. And I did it. I ran 5 kilometers without stopping, even though I desperately wanted to several times. All the bromides about running, muscles aflame, breath ragged, eyes watering to the point of blurred vision, came true. But mental determination spurred me more than physical strength. It didn't really matter if, in the past, I'd never pictured myself doing something like this. Here I was, doing it, the wall crumbling in the background. The weather was crisp, and at one point along a closed-off East 17th Avenue in front of City Park, I threw my head back, closed my eyes, and experienced one of those glorious slow-mo movie moments, the sun soaking my face as I passed by a traffic cop. I've never been a particularly earnest or optimistic guy, but I felt present in that moment. I want to say that I kept running, and I meant to. I was going to keep training for a fall 5K at some point, and I ran sporadically over that summer. I've also run sporadically in the past few weeks. But for the most part, I haven't. As much as I enjoy reaching my goal, I realize that I fundamentally don't want to get up before my kids every morning. It's hard fitting running in with my current lifestyle and needs, and I don't feel guilty about that. I may start again, I'm not sure. The Nikes whisper to me, The Nikes whisper to me as I open the closet. But knowing I ran a 5K at all will make it easier to do again. I may one day finish that Couch to 5K app, which remains frozen at the halfway mark. It'll be there when I need it.
One more time for John Wenzel, everyone. Your next performer... So excited to have her here. Wonderful performer. Please give it up for Elena Ingram.
Thank you. I don't really have a story. I have a TED Talk. It's actually much easier to get licensed. as a TEDx talk than you would imagine. It's very easy. How many people here care about the planet, care about the environment? Good for you guys. That's great. Did you know in 2013, Americans produced over 254 million tons of trash? That's a lot of trash. And we recycled only 87 million of it, which is only 34.3%. A lot of facts. Keep them in your head. And Americans produce 4.4 pounds of trash per person per day. Okay? It's a lot of trash. Shocking. Per day. You know that 60 million plastic bottles are thrown away every single day? It's about 22 billion per year. Okay, 22 plastic bottles annually. 60 million per day, 22 million per year. Billion. You guys got it. It's not supposed to be funny yet. These are real facts. I think I Googled them. This could all be bullshit. I'm not in charge. But from what they tell me. And did you know there's a huge island of trash in the middle of the Pacific Ocean called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch? Oh, you guys have heard about this. There's 1.8 trillion pieces of trash floating around in the Pacific Ocean. It's about twice the size of Texas, three times the size of France. It's a pretty enormous, pretty impressive. And you know, 100 million animals, marine animals, are killed by ingesting trash every year. Sea turtles, birds. You know, it's heavy. It's like the guy with all his family dying and shit. It's right up there. It's a lot of trash, okay? A lot of dead animals. I really think we can do better than this. As a society, we owe it to each other. You know, we need to triple that patch. You're saying twice the size of Texas, you call that the great fucking garbage patch? Get over yourselves. Okay, I want to see at least twice the size of Alaska. Okay? Maybe three times the size of France? Get the fuck out of here. I want to see three times the size of Russia. Okay? We have one life that we need to live. Okay? So sad. We're settling. We're settling for so much less. There are two things in this world and two things only. There's trash and there's pre-trash. Everything you touch, everything you make will be trash. Museums are just pre-trash houses, trying to pretend like things aren't going to be trash, but they're going to be trash someday. From there, trash splits into two categories, okay? Biodegradable and non-biodegradable. Other words, fertilizer and trash. That's it. Fertilizer, it's like organic matter and plants, dead animals, shit like that. It's all fertilizer. We're mostly going to be fertilizer, depending on your diet, probably. If you keep it clean enough, I think you should be good. Sorry, I'm just getting a little bit parched. So I'm going to get to the drink. I'm just saying, it takes 10 to 1,000 years for a plastic bag to degrade. You will never have that kind of impact on the planet. But every time you go to King Soopers, you can think, little piece of me is going to be here forever if I just pay that extra 10 cents to buy a bag. Styrofoam? Think diamonds are forever? Bullshit. Styrofoam is forever. That's really all I wanted to talk about. Buy more shit, throw more stuff away. That's about it. Yeah, thank you guys.
Elena Ingram, everyone. Your next performer, he asked me to tell you, don't fuck with him in the mosh pit. That sounds very authoritative coming from me, but please help me welcome Nikki Blade.
Thank you. Hello. Hi. I came to tell you guys the story about my new tattoo. I hope you enjoy it. Before I begin, I just want to say that my favorite band is Fall Out Boy. And so they inspire me a lot. And I know you guys are thinking, if you love Fall Out Boy, or Nikki, I just changed my name on MySpace for legal reasons, and I keep forgetting that my name is Nikki now. Nikki Blade. And people are always like, Nikki, if you love Fall Out Boy so much, why are you always wearing that heavy pistol carnage fallacy hoodie all the time? Everywhere you go. So I understand that that's wrong. Anyways, Fall Out Boy uses long titles, and I wanted to inspire from that. So this is a story of love and loss. Parentheses. Story of a girl who cried a river and she drowned herself. Double parentheses, I wish, end parentheses. I met her at a used concert in the Circle Pit. It was Thursday, which ironically was the name of the opening band as well. She was picking up pennies. And I looked down. Wow. Watching you. I'll be watching you on MySpace, Betty Brutal. I will. I love you so much. And I miss you so fucking much, Betty. Please, come back to me. Please, I'll get a tattoo. I will get a tattoo, anything you want. I will, Betty, be here. Ah, oh, Betty, I love you so much. I love you, Betty. This will be on my body for the rest of my life for you, Betty. I have to go get my tattoo right now.
Nikki Blade, everyone. Did you ever get to see 6 years of your teenage life reenacted in 10 minutes? I just did. Your next guests, they're all over everything that's awesome right now. Really, please, just welcome No Gods, No Masters.
Hey, old man Slab, you know what I like in particular?
Yeah.
The sweet void of nothingness. It's so comforting.
Hey!
Hey, what's going on, Emma?
I'm so glad I found you. The worst thing ever's happening.
Oh no, did the co-op run out of food?
No.
Did liberals condemn us on TV for being too radical?
No.
What?
Oh God, I hope it's not that. Is it that?
No!
Well, what is it?
It's the capitalists! They're putting up a bank in town!
Bum, bum, bum!
And they're wanting us to use money!
Oh, no!
Are they going to make us get jobs?
No, because we're going to burn it down.
Oh, no, that sounds too violent. We should chain ourselves to the door so no one can use it.
No way! Burning capitalist stuff is not violence.
Oh, but I don't want to do that. Chains!
Black block!
Chains!
Yeah. Black block!
Oh, man, well, if you guys are going to be that way, then I'm just not going to help you at all. Oh, here comes Valerie. Maybe she can help us.
Hey, guys, what seems to be the problem here?
We need to devise a plan to burn down the banks, and we can't agree on what to do!
Yeah, they want to use violence, and if that's what they're going to do, then I don't want to be a part of it.
Whoa!
Blah.
This is a real pickle. Have any of you ever heard of solidarity?
Oh, no. What's solidarity?
No.
Okay, so you know how sometimes even with your friends and family, you have disagreements, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, even if you were mad at the people who always have your back, would you not show up and support them, especially when they need you most?
Oh, no, that would be terrible.
I guess so.
Exactly. So that means even if you don't 100% agree with your political allies, you still need to show up and support. That's called solidarity.
Wow.
I even have a really cool song I can teach you guys to help us remember to keep solidarity when times are tough.
Well, how's it go?
I'll show you. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. This movement makes me strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, this movement makes me strong.
Wow, I get it now. Emma, even though I don't agree with you 100%, I still need to support you because you are my comrade.
Wow, that means a lot.
Well, it sounds like you guys have it all figured out. So what's the plan?
Solidarity forever.
Yeah, solidarity makes sense.
No Gods, No Masters, everyone. Thank you all so much for coming out to Queen City Companion. That has been our show for this month. Please join us next month. And if you are looking to perform or interested in performing, please, please do. It's such a fun show. Give it up for yourselves for being here. Hell yeah. And for everyone you've seen tonight. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.